From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, our newest book song, where we create a unique, one-of-a-kind song just for your book, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today's guest, Mary Cantell, is a writer who always wanted to follow in the footsteps of journalist Barbara Walters. When her third grade teacher told her parents their daughter would never become a mathematician, she took the cue and adopted the self-fulfilling prophecy that led to pursuing a natural love of language, and she eventually achieved a radio TV career spanning over 15 years, where she served as a broadcast traffic and news reporter. Welcome to the Authors on Fire podcast, Mary.
Hey, Pat. Great to be with you. Thank you.
That must have been a fun job.
I thought it was. It was cool. Mm-hmm. It served everything that I liked. I could talk and, you know, kind of like have my name out there if I needed to do anything where I could have an audio calling card. I wanted to get into writing, so I thought, someone said to me once, well, they don't know who you are, so, you know, they might not buy your book, but if you had like a reputation or something going for you, you know, that might serve you well. So I thought, well, you know what? Let's try this thing. So I applied for the job and the rest is history.
I love that. I love radio. I love terrestrial radio. When it comes to offering and selling your books, it's a great marketing tool.
Right.
All righty. Well, so you've had a long career in broadcast journalism. What first pulled you from reporting real stories into writing fiction?
Well, when you get laid off from your job and you have a degree in English writing, it's like, you know what? I think this is a sign from God to just pursue what you always wanted to do. And that was my natural love of writing. Like you mentioned, I wasn't good at anything in schools, like as far as math or science or things like that. The brainy kids, I was not in that group, but hung out with them a lot. But I just basically thought, why don't I start writing? People would say before, you should write a book. You know, why don't you write a book? And it's really easier said than done. And I had a job, so there's no time to write a book when you have a job. But when that job went away, I thought, okay, well, here's the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. What was your first book?
It was called Her Glass Heart. Mm-hmm. All my books are three words, and I try to keep the titles metaphorical. I don't know why, but I went to a class once or heard something somewhere in some writer's conference. But, you know, people who have been down this road before me shared their knowledge. And basically they said three-word titles sell well, mm-hmm. and usually with the word the in it sells well. So I said, okay, well, you know, why not?
Well, there you go. So now we've got a book we're going to talk about today, Pretty White Lies, another three-word title. Is this a bit of a departure from your earlier books?
Well, the topic certainly is, but it really isn't. I'm still the main character. There's still, I guess, the squeamishness of having a child in danger. Appeals to audiences, or at least to women I know, mothers especially. So, you know, the plot's different, the titles are different, or rather the characters' names are different, as well as the titles. But it's still me as the protagonist. Can't get out of that yet, but maybe one day.
There you go. So Pretty White Lies centers around a child's unresolved death. What inspired that thought and that story?
Yeah, I know that when a reader picks up a book, for me anyway, unless it hits viscerally, like this could happen, you know, this could really happen to me or in my life, as opposed to science fiction, which for me is a departure totally of reality. Some people glom onto that, and I get it. My husband is one of them, but unless it can really happen, it doesn't draw my attention. So I thought that, you know, a child going missing would kind of like stimulate someone to read. It just piques my curiosity. So that's what I write. You know, I write what I think and what I know best.
And this was an unresolved death. Why did you think to make it almost like a cold case?
That way I could write a book around it. And I've seen signs in our neighborhood sometimes, you know, remember, you know, John Doe or whatever the name is of the person who was killed tragically, and it's not solved yet. Like, remember John Doe. And I feel in my heart, it must be horrible for the parents to not know, you know, how their child passed or where their child is, for what reason is, you know, is he dead or she dead? So that's always intrigued me, that kind of plot line, the mystery of it all, the wondering. So I set it in Philadelphia because I know that area well. It's actually on the main line of Philadelphia. So I pictured what this, you know, the streets look like and how it could conceivably happen because of, you know, walking these streets at one point myself.
Mm-hmm. So your investigative reporter in this book is Marley Maines, who we now know is somewhat you. How much of you is in this character?
She's doggedly determined. She doesn't give up. She treats it like it's, you know, her own child, basically. So I just put my whole heart into it.
As you're writing a character who is somewhat you, and I think, you know, all writers is like a mishmash of you, family members, people you've known, but this character in particular is somewhat of you. Did the character ever take off and do things that you might not have done, or was Marley always consistent with you?
I'm trying to see if I took a departure. I'm trying to think back, and I have her going through the park. I have her with a best friend. But yeah, she did take a departure. She drank. I don't drink. She saw a psychologist. I wouldn't have taken that route. I was laid off myself, but I wouldn't have started to drink over it. So I made her have her highs higher and her lows lower than I would have. Someone had said, make the, I'm giving away the plot at this point, but someone said, make the psychologist part of the drama and the plot, like make her the bad guy. And I thought about it and I thought, you know, that wouldn't be too kosher. I wouldn't want to bring down the whole assembly of people who are in this business, the psychiatrist world and all that. I wouldn't want to taint it. Is what I'm trying to say. So I steered clear of that. My psychologist in the book was, you know, pure as the driven snow.
There you go. Well, now that we've kind of danced around some of the characters here, maybe give us a little peek, give our listeners a picture of what the book is about.
Yeah, the book is about a reporter who was right on the verge of trying to find out the truth about an unsolved mystery. You can picture unsolved mysteries on television. I've always been drawn to that show. And, you know, the guy that is the character who basically is the narrator, Keith. I forget his last name at the moment. Oldman, I forget, but I can picture his face. I haven't watched TV in a long time because our TV broke about 3 years ago. So I haven't watched Unsolved Mysteries in a while, but he takes us through the scenario of it. And that's what the main character was going to do when she was laid off all of a sudden out of the blue. And it just didn't sit well with her right in the middle of a hot story to be taken away from that story right when, you know, the getting was good for her and it would have been a great thing. She may have won an award and all that goes with, you know, writing good, solving problems like that in the broadcast industry. You could get an award for that, best story or whatever. But she was let go and she slowly decided instead of getting paid to find the solution to the death of this little 10-year-old girl on Halloween of all nights, while she was basically trick-or-treating, she decided to find out on her own without getting paid at all and investigated it and went behind the scenes and did her job without really the pay. The paycheck was the only thing that she didn't get. And she just, like I said, very determinedly wanted to figure this story out. And she did.
And she did. Yes, she did. Thank you. Thank you for that. And so the title, how did you come up with Pretty White Lies?
Some of the characters were living double lives. They weren't saying the truth, and they were kind of like handy coding it. The boyfriend of Dee was one, the cousin of Dee, who was the best friend of Marley. She was hiding her own true feelings. So people were lying, but they weren't lying to deceive. They were just lying to obfuscate. And there's sort of a difference, but it's still not true. And it's still a lie. So I called it Pretty and White to keep that metaphorical theme. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I came up with it.
Interesting. And then how about the cover?
I was doing some reading about covers, and they were saying sometimes blue covers attract whatever is in vogue at the time. This time they said it was pink. So I said, okay, let's do pink. And I gave free range to the illustrator, and I thought she did a good job. So I said, it's good. It's good. The one before that was The Fragile Things. And it was, I think he also did pink, but it looked like Pepto-Bismol pink. And I said, I wouldn't pick this up, and this is my book. So he changed it to something that was, you know, turquoise blue. And I thought, here we go. It's all good. It's all good. So, yeah.
Yes, you don't want people thinking of Pepto-Bismol or K-O-Pectate when they pick up your book.
Right. It goes against the grain when you go to pick it up in a bookstore.
Absolutely. Right? These things are very, very important. You know, I was thinking back to your history in broadcasting. When you're speaking on air, there's a certain pace and a rhythm. How did that translate? How did that broadcasting influence translate into your writing, whether the pacing or the dialogue? Did you feel that it was in sync?
Well, the pacing and the dialogue, I got all of that from writers' conferences and classes and editors hammering me, saying, no, this is too stilted. You need to write it like it's just talking. So basically, that's where I got my cues mainly. But as far as the broadcast part of it, you just want to be clear, concise, and brief. Say it in as few words as possible without going on and on. Like I did traffic in Philadelphia. After 60 seconds, the audience is not listening. They're in their cars. They see a hold up or wherever, a slow down. If you keep going on and on about every jot and tittle of roadway, they kind of lose interest. You know, after 60 seconds, you have to nail it in 60 seconds or you will most likely lose your audience. So that's what I did. And I can still hear the editors in my head when I'm writing. No, that's too stilted. They wouldn't say it that way. You know, you don't just say, I want you to go to the store. You just say, you want to go, or let's go, or, you know, you keep the sentences like cut off and truncated. You don't speak in clear, perfect sentences in a book, but in real life, yeah, you do. So I tried to do everything.
And you did, didn't you? Oh my gosh.
So well, I got laid off from that job. So that's the reason why I'm writing a book. So I don't have to worry about that anymore. But
exactly.
The old rule still follows. After 60 seconds, I'm not interested anymore. You know, in fact, I don't even listen to traffic anymore because it's like it was like my job. And now I'm thinking, you know, I don't need to listen to it anymore. And that's what Marley did in her book. She heard a traffic report. She's at a light, traffic light. And she says, you know what? I'm not going to listen to this, because she was just heartbroken that it wasn't her anymore giving that report. And that's how I brought in the character that, you know, eventually dies.
Mm-hmm. I get that. So fun. So what's next? Is there another book with Marley in it?
There's no Marley. Every book is a standalone. As much as I would have loved to have taken the first character, Jordana, and brought her into the second book, but I had a whole different character for each of them. And Marley she's done. Now I have another lady named, I'm thinking of calling her Becca, but I'm not married to it yet. But there is a seventh book. It's called What She Whispered. And it's a struggle to write even after you've written six books. The seventh book doesn't get any easier. And as much as I, you know, think I know how to write, it's like it's still a struggle. I still get writer's block. Mm-hmm. And so I pray my way through it. I ask people to pray for me. I pray that something will come to mind. So it's taken a long time. I have like about 25 words into it, but I started it months ago. And I keep hearing my editors saying things. It's just a little bit harder now, I think, because I have so many editors that I've worked with, and they all have different opinions of things. And when I read books and I see the same mistakes that they accused me of, I see it in writing. I'm thinking, well, how come I can't get away with that? So, like I said, I'm writing a seventh book, but it's really going nowhere fast. So.
Oh, that's interesting. You may have too many voices in your head at this point.
I think I do. I have to weed somebody out. I really do.
Yes.
I mean, it's subjective too, because some editors will accept some things, some editors will not. I must have gotten really critical editors, harsh editors, which I'm glad. They didn't take any schlock. They're no nonsense. But we had creative differences on that last book. And so, you know, it is what it is. But I'm grateful for all the help. I really am. But it's funny when I see other people writing stuff that I would not have gotten away with. Mm-hmm. I just kind of get a little bit curious as to, you know, why can't I write that way? Passive voice, info dumping, head hopping. There's a book out there right now. It's a bestseller. I'm not going to say the name because I'm not putting down an editor or a writer rather. But I am reading it. I'm thinking I could never have written this. How did this person, first of all, get an agent and then get it published with a big publisher? And I'm in a quandary. I'm in a quandary, Pat. It's like, I don't know, but I'm aiming for the best I can do. I'm listening to the editors, and if it takes a year to write it, that's so be it. It's all
good. My gosh. I almost want to tell you just to write your version, you know, just for you, so that you don't feel like you're being squashed from all sides. Just write it. And maybe if that's not the final one, at least you have a document of what you wanted it to be.
Good advice. And that's true, because they say writing is really rewriting. And I've done this for the 25 pages that I've written. I go back and I want to go forward, but I go back first just to check it. And I see stuff that's just, it doesn't thrum with me. It doesn't strike a chord. It's like, ugh. And I rewrite and I say, oh, okay. Now it's better. Now it's better. But writing is just rewriting. So you're right. I should just write it and then rewrite later to get out of the slump of 25 pages when it needs to be at least, you know, 150 or 200.
Exactly. Just run with it. Just take it from beginning and end. Wherever it lands, it lands.
Good idea.
All right. If you were going to write in a completely different genre, is there something else that kind of calls you?
Besides a psychological fiction, I don't like historic fiction. I don't have the wherewithal to go back in time to research all those little things that are historic. I mean, God bless those writers. I know one myself, Pat Jean Davis, and she's written one. And I have to admire that. That's somewhere I wouldn't go. I just like that genre where it's a psychological thriller, not necessarily a police procedural, but something where it could happen to me. And it's scary, like that movie, I Know Who You Are, and I Saw What You Did back in, I was a little girl when that came out.
Yes.
And I remember that she was babysitting and she made these phony phone calls to a man who had just murdered somebody. And she said, I know who you are and I saw what you did. That is scary to me, because she went to his house because she was just so curious, or he invited her to the house, whatever, but it wasn't good. Or the babysitter that gets the phone call, I'm upstairs in your house. And it's like, and she's trapped in the house with the kid that she's babysitting. And now there's a killer up on the loose in the house. That just strikes me as something that could really happen. So to answer your question, which was what, 2 minutes ago, to finally answer your question, I think I would stay where I am because I'm good at this because I'm feeling it, you know, feeling it.
All right. I thought you might have had like a secret, like children's books or cozy mystery or something like that.
I like cozy. I like Debbie McComber. Mm-hmm. I think it's lovely. I really, really do. It's quaint. I love the titles that she brings her books. They're all different, like streets. I do like the coziness of it. I think I sway into that a little bit, but it's mainly just basically a saga of fiction with elements of romance and elements of mystery. And there's nothing offensive in my work, by the way. There's no gratuitous cursing or indiscriminate behavior, which some people might want that, but I'm not Amish clean. Definitely there's some sizzle and heat, especially with this last one, because it's a true-to-life situation that really happened to me, and I put it in the book. And that's all I'm saying.
There you go. All right. Well, for our listeners to find out more about you, where should we go? Website, Amazon, give us places where we can find you.
Well, you know, Amazon has everybody, right? Anybody and everybody can be on Amazon because it's Amazon. The name is Mary Cantell, C-A-N-T-E-L-L, two L's. But when you go to Amazon, it's kind of funny. It'll say, are you sure you don't mean Mary Cantrell with an R? And I say, no, Cantell. So you put in Cantell, it still comes up with, you mean Mary Cantrell, don't you? Or you mean Mary Cantwell, don't you? Because she's a well-known writer. But Mary Cantell is there. You just have to find it and click on it. And then there's the website, it's just marycantell.com. And yeah, okay. Website and Amazon. It's the book is everywhere. It's with christianbooks.com. It's with Barnes & Noble. I do those book signing things. I have one in November, or I'm sorry, one in June at the Bryn Mawr one in Philadelphia suburbs on June 20th. But I think the best place is Amazon or the website, marycantell.com.
All righty. I know several authors as well that when you go to Amazon and type in their name, they just won't give it to you. They'll give you all the versions that are famous versions or whatever. And you really have to, you have to work to find it. So
I hear you. That's happened to me too. I've looked at people just by their book. Mm-hmm. And you don't get them, or you put just their name, but then you say, okay, the book by so-and-so, and definitely it'll come up then. But the algorithm with Amazon is a little bit skewed sometimes. I can't figure it out. They can't figure it out because I've asked them before. Because there was a time when I put a book in, the book title, and I said, I think it was the fourth book, Hope Another Way, and everything but Hope Another Way came up, like that wasn't a book. And I called them. I said, this is a book. I put book in to the subject, and I want books. And everything but Hope Another Way popped up. They fixed it, but it was like, where is this algorithm going? You know?
All right. Well, thank you for sharing this book with us, Pretty White Lies, marycantell.com. Thank you for joining us and sharing your book. And I look forward to what's coming up next. So please keep us posted. Thank you.
Thank you for this privilege, and happy reading to all the fans.